This is Pants in the Boot. I'm Glenn Fleischman, your host in the great state of Washington. This is the third part of Series 4, our series on meals. And with me is Dan Morin from Massachusetts, Chris Finn from near Dundee, Scotland, James Thompson in Glasgow, Anthony Johnston in the northwest of England, Annette Weirstra in Edmonton, and Erica Ensign in Edmonton by way of Wisconsin. Folks, it's time for our midday meal, whatever we call it. What do you eat around noon, 11:30? 2 p.m.? When do you eat it? What is this meal we eat in the middle of the day?
I would tend to eat around 2 o'clock. And this is mainly because I'm a night owl. Mostly because it's mostly the fault of Americans that I end up staying late.
Sure, James. Blame us. Yeah.
Well, I find it very disturbing when I get up in the morning and then I see people like you from the East Coast posting on Twitter. And I'm like, I do get up quite late. But anyway, so I have a late breakfast and then I will have my lunch around sort of 2 o'clock, sometimes 3 if I've forgotten. But
I think it's honestly as early as possible most days because I get up, you know, my wife gets up to go to work later now than she used to, but usually she's out of the house by 7 or so and I can't go back to sleep at that point. So I usually get up and eat breakfast. So if I eat breakfast around 7:30 or something like that, by the time noon rolls around, I'm often extremely hungry. So, you know, sometimes there's a snack stuck in there somewhere. But I will eat at noon. And in fact, in the past couple of weeks, I've definitely had days where it's like, oh my God, it's 11:45. Can I legally eat lunch yet? I'll like start making stuff at 11:45. And then at noon, I'll be like, all right, it's okay now.
We could kind of have lunch together if we arranged this properly.
That's true.
I feel like I'm the exact opposite of that because when I was still working in the office, I literally had to schedule in snacks at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. so that I would remember to eat because I just get so focused on what I'm doing. God, so when I was in the office, I would eat 2 tablespoons of mixed nuts at 11 and at 3 p.m. Yeah. And then at lunchtime, I would have, I mentioned in our breakfast episode that I have a breakfast shake every morning. Well, guess what? It's also a lunch shake because I am just super lazy and I don't like trying to plan ahead. So yeah, I would just have a shake at lunchtime.
It's not a brunch shake is what you're saying.
No, absolutely not. There's one for breakfast. Shakes. Now that I'm home, though, I will eat like leftovers or banana bread or noodles or whatever's around.
A brunch shake to me, I'm now imagining some kind of liquidized, you know, pancake, bacon, maple syrup concoction.
It would have to have booze in it, too. Definitely.
Oh, yeah, we can do that. Yeah. We can do that. A mimosa just pulled in.
I see, I'm like Dan in that I'm hungry by the time noon rolls around because I get up sort of between 8 and 8:30 most days, eat breakfast pretty much straight away, and then I allow myself a biscuit with my coffee refill.
Of course,
at about
you do.
10:30 in the morning.
Do you have to beat yourself with twigs after
between 5 hours of martial arts practice in the morning and the 3 hours of meditation?
But then, yeah, come around noon. So see, a lot of this schedule developed around when I had dogs, and so my routine was sort of scheduled around their need to, you know, go out and eat and what have you. So at about 10:30, I make my coffee refill, have a biscuit, and then at 12:30, roundabout, I will have, some kind of snack, but it's not really a lunch. I'll literally have like another biscuit and a banana and maybe a bag of crisps, chips to you guys. And that's pretty much it. And then it's not until later, about 3 o'clock, that I have what I think of as actual lunch, where I might have a bagel or something, you know, or a sandwich.
Well, you know, I worked with a bunch of people, a bunch of freelancers in shared offices over a few years. And one of them, this good friend of mine, David, he'd start to get hungry for lunch at, I don't know, like 9 in the morning. And I think he might have eaten before that. So at 11, he'd be like, hey, what do you think about, is it too early for lunch, whatever? And so I got in the habit, I got retrained. And so 11:30 for me is lunch, but it's also, back when we were allowed to go outside, Seattle was a very busy town and will be again one day in the future. And by noon, almost anywhere I'd want to go as a solo person going out for lunch, if I wasn't meeting somebody, would be totally packed. And, you know, there'd be a line with 50 people in it. So 11:30 is my de facto eating out of the house lunch in those days. And but at home, I'll eat whenever I'm hungry.
I will say many of us even prior to the current world situation worked at home, and I feel like that was one of the things I struggled the most with when I first started doing it many years ago, was trying to find ways that, you know, when I used to work in an office, like we'd go out for lunch or I'd bring lunch and, like, you know, there was some activity built in, whereas now it's like, all right, walk from the desk to the kitchen and it's lunchtime. And so I finally got into the point where I had to start being a little more judicious, because I felt like lunch was easier to control in terms of what I had. So, almost every day I make myself a salad, have some yogurt and a banana. And like, that's like that's my lunch almost every day, unless there's like leftovers that need to get eaten or I'm going out to meet someone, which never happens anymore. But yeah, I think that was the hardest thing, was just trying to find ways to control, like, I could have.
This episode is slowly, it's getting more and more dystopian as we go on.
Yeah. So I have a working from home lunch related question. If I'm having lunch, and typically I have a smaller lunch at this point because I've been stupidly dieting for the last 2 years, even though nobody can ever see me ever again. But anyway, I would go into the kitchen. I would make myself a little plate of whatever, and then I would bring it back to my computer where I am sitting working. And I would sit and probably catch up on social media or something like that. I wouldn't be necessarily working while eating, but I would be sat at my desk with my, spilling crumbs all over my keyboard and all these things.
I'm a rare lunch at the desk person, unless the one exception being unless I'm working on something that has like a deadline. Like if I'm editing a podcast that needs to go out, I will sometimes like grab, especially like for me, clockwise, when my podcast records at noon on Wednesdays. So like I finish the show, it's 12:30. I am, as I've discussed before, ravenous. And so I will go and get lunch, bring it back and edit the show. But almost every other time my lunch routine is that is like when I watch my hour of TV is like I go sit in the living room, I eat my lunch, I watch a TV show, and then I go back to work.
So what you've told me is next time I'm on Clockwise, I'm going to ask a food related question so that you are feeling extra hungry.
I want to be clear, I will murder you.
I got out of the habit of eating at my desk because I used to do it all the time when I worked in publishing. Because of just the nature, sort of deadline driven nature of that industry, you know, you almost never have time to go out for lunch. And so when I went freelance and started working from home many, many years ago now, it was one of the things that I weaned myself off of because I didn't want to associate, you know, food with desk and all that sort of thing. And I did want to get out and get up and walk around and what have you. So I'll allow myself, you know, I'll eat an apple at my desk, sure. But if I'm going to have actual lunch, you know, proper, something a bit heartier, I will always go away from my desk and, you know, just go and eat it somewhere else so that I don't have that association of food with desk, because otherwise I would just eat all day long and would be three times the size I am.
Well, that's one reason why I don't have any snacks on my desk, because that way madness lies.
Can I ask how widespread the great cultural British institution of the meal deal is? So in the UK, it's a very depressing thing, I think. If you go into Tesco or Sainsbury's or even Boots, the pharmacist, which is always perplexes me. You'll be able to do the meal deal, and you'll, for sort of £3, £4, £5, you'll get a sandwich, a bag of crisps, and a drink.
Oh yeah.
And there's something particular. Yeah. There's something particularly good, but it's not a nice sandwich, right? So every time I go to the States, you get these proper like Scooby snacks sandwiches, but in the UK, it's these, what Douglas Adams might describe.
Oh yes.
These sort of very tragic rectangles of bread cut into a triangle and packaged up.
In the US, you would call that like a box lunch.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it would be
really
roughly
sad.
Of similar quality.
Cellophane sealed sandwiches cut in triangles with limp lettuce was definitely, that's an older thing. I was going to say, it's a funny thing. We've been talking about lunch for a while, and unlike breakfast and brunch, there is not a defining characteristic of lunch, I think, in any of, you know, our sort of English speaking cultures. I can't think of it, except the sandwich, but that's changed over time too. And I have the sandwich experience, which is Seattle does not have good sandwich shops or doesn't have many. And I was always disappointed. And I went into one new place with some friends a few years ago. It had just opened up. And I said, I walked in, I took one look and I said, I know exactly what's going to happen. That guy's going to be incredibly slow. They're going to serve it on this like 4,000 grain bread. It's going to be like the most, it's going to be like a barely any wheat in it. It's going to be so covered in nuts and berries. It's going to be a very simple sandwich. It's going to take forever. And it's going to cost like $12. And I was right. Because I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, and every place was like that. And there is kind of the crunchy sandwich shop, but like it's very hard to find just a normal, you know, Subway, maybe Subway sandwich chain may have taken out kind of a big hunk of that because of the cost and convenience and speed aspect. But is the sandwich, I mean, I don't know if that's true in the UK, in Canada, in America, I feel like the sandwich is the unit of measure.
One just follow up on the meal deal sandwich. So these places tend to do fancier sandwiches, but of course they're not included in the meal deal. Again, I'm sounding quite Scottish here. I will look at the pricing of the various things and I will make some of my decisions based upon, well, that juice costs £2.
Outside of the meal deal.
Yeah, well,
that's
it's like
the point
yeah,
of it, yeah. Is it
yeah, same? So I'm really getting £5 or £6 worth of stuff for my £3. So I'm going to get that juice and that snack and that sandwich because I have then robbed Tesco of £3.
In Canada, well, in Edmonton, we actually have one really good sandwich chain called Pressed, which is a local thing to Edmonton.
Oh,
so
it's
I
really
don't
good.
Know. Yeah, and it was like a guy who went someplace in the States and was wowed by the sandwich culture and like how great the sandwiches were and decided to bring that back to Edmonton. And I was very pleased to discover that when I got here. But you mentioned Subway, and that is one of the things that I found the most sort of like mind-boggling is that every single small town in Alberta has a Subway. It may not even have a Tim Hortons, but I guarantee you there is a Subway. Seriously, it's just a thing. It's weird.
It's got to be the most like widespread like chain in North America, I feel like. Maybe outside McDonald's, Starbucks. But like certainly sandwich. Mm-hmm.
So here's a thing that's become increasingly popular over here, which is almost kind of sold as an American style thing, but I don't think it's actually a thing in America, and that is lunchtime sandwich wraps.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a thing.
Yeah, it's become
a thing. Is it a thing?
People have been trying to reduce bread.
Right, you take a tortilla wrap and fit
with
a sandwich.
You can get those at Subway. Subway serves those.
It started as a way people trying to reduce bread, and also people who are gluten-free can get a non-gluten wrap more easily, and they can make gluten-free bread.
Mm. I will say the chicken Caesar wrap is one of mankind's great inventions.
They're sold over here partly as a healthy alternative, basically, because you can get gluten-free ones, and even the ones that are wheat, obviously there's less gluten, less just stuff than in slices of bread. So
I've never seen a gluten-free version of this. I've only ever seen gluten-free sandwiches. So this is news to me as a gluten-free eater.
The Ur wrap in this context is the burrito. And it brings me on to talking about the fact that in the UK, I'm very jealous of the fact that we don't particularly have a food cart culture that you have, especially on the west coast of the US.
Well, the closest we have is burger vans, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got burger vans, which, you know, fair play, man. I'm not going to denigrate the burger van.
My association with the vans is when I was at school, what would happen is all these predatory vans would pull up outside the school.
Let's clarify predatory in this context.
Well, you know, I mean, who knows? But it was the, you know, burgers, chips,
fritters.
You mentioned the Scooby snacks earlier, which possibly should be explained in terms of the Scottish version, which is basically everything just piled up.
There's also in Scotland as well, there's a phenomenon of the munchie box.
Everybody
listening to this right now, and that includes everybody listening to me talking as we record this podcast, must immediately Google munchie box. M-U-N-C-H-Y-B-O-X. It is basically anything that can be deep fried and put in a 12 by 12 inch pizza box.
Oh, good
Lord.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, this is a crime against...
Dear God.
Why is the Hague not been involved in this? This is a crime against humanity.
I want this.
It includes kebab meat. And I was going to say, did you not have kebab vans outside the schools as well?
I think kebabs were probably sort of
after
like... in the 80s, you know, it wasn't really that. You did get there was the three-in-one places, which was, it was chips, it was pizza, and it was probably Indian or something like that. But kebabs, not quite as much.
This munchie box reminds me of the freak shake, which is not a lunch dish as such, but which I think, I don't know if it's a UK invention or not, or is it an East Coast US? I'd never heard of it before I started seeing pictures of, on a skewer, there's like a hamburger and a leg of chicken.
Fries.
And it's bizarre.
We are talking about vans, and there is a canonical van in Glasgow in the West End called the Maggie, which has been there, like, I think longer than the city has been, frankly. And it sells all of these things, and it stays open very late, and it primarily caters to very drunk students.
Oh, yeah. We had one of those in my college called the Hot Truck.
not the Hot Truck, but the Hot Truck.
In the context of predatory.
But that's the kind of food vans that we have here.
Yeah, but in America, you've got, especially, it reminded me of the burrito, but you've got really good Mexican food. You've got, grilled cheese vans. Man, that sounds amazing.
We've got that too.
So there is a weird thing that has started up here, in that we do have a culture of sort of upscale food vans, but they're all parked inside of building. So it's they're not on a street. It's like you go to a building and there will be like a collection of food vans that have all arrived there. And it sort of makes it like a sort of destination, like a food court.
Like they drive the van inside the building?
No, they're just always there.
Oh, they've built it like
a warehouse
in the shape of airstreams, essentially.
So some of them are physical vans, some of them are facsimiles of vans.
So it's a food court.
Yeah, but the food court, it's not really a
vans.
It's like trying to use the culture of the food vans from America to sell food. But you do get the ones where there is actually literal vans that drive into a big warehouse and you go to the warehouse.
I will say there's a terminology difference. At least here, we have a very thriving food truck culture, but we don't say van. It's definitely food trucks. Obviously, it's only in the summertime.
We've already done trucks.
Please tune into our lorry truck van episode. Well, I think I'm getting a little peckish. I know we just had lunch, but I'm kind of interested in some sort of midday snack. So I think we're going to sign off for now and come back for tea or snack, or I don't know what we're going to call it, but we're going to talk about that in the next episode. Thank you all for joining me, and thank you to Chris Breen for our theme music. And please visit the network that we are part of, that many of us appear routinely on podcasts within, The Incomparable, which you can find at theincomparable.com. Get more of our nonsense, help support us in producing nonsense. And, you know, we have like, I think, several months worth of things to listen to if you just put them on play continuously. And maybe that sounds like an awfully nice idea right now. Take care, be good, and come back for snack.